Grammy-winning jazz prodigy Jacob Collier is set to bring his one-man band live show to the Fryhofer's Saratoga Jazz Festival on Saturday night. He'll be opening for Chaka Khan after a day filled with music. Collier became famous for his trademark YouTube videos where he sings all the parts, plays all the instruments, and visualizes every component with a mosaic of screens. His live show uses a range of technologies developed at MIT to mimic that effect. Collier spent the last couple of years working under the wing of legendary producer Quincy Jones. He released his debut album, In My Room, last summer. The album went to number one on the iTunes jazz charts in 23 countries. It also debuted number one on the Billboard Contemporary Jazz Album chart. Oh, and by the way, earlier this year, he won two Grammys. It is a great pleasure to welcome Jacob Collier to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's very nice to hear your voice.
Very nice to hear yours. You are an incredible talent, and here's the thing that I get from watching you work. It seems as though you're having just a blast.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something I enjoy doing. I feel like at the fundamental of all the musical endeavors that I sort of take off upon, it's that sense of joy that I'm most drawn towards. And I've always loved joyful music. You know, people like Stevie Wonder and you know these guys. Growing up, I was just drenched in this musical joy, and I think it's something that I really strive towards.
When did you start to, did you ever think of this as a form of jazz, or did you just think of it as your form of music?
I think that I was making music before I'd had the chance to work out what the kind of music was that I was making, which in some ways is quite a nice way to go about it. But I think that I've realized in the last few years that a lot of the foundation for harmony and rhythm comes from jazz. That said, I don't think I necessarily count myself as a jazz musician primarily, just because a lot of the music that I listen to is not jazz. But I think that actually it's something that Quincy Jones often says to me, is that jazz is like the classical music of pop music. And so if you can understand where things come from in terms of jazz, I think you're in pretty good stead for, you know, understanding how songs fit together and music in general.
So if your album goes on the jazz charts and you win Grammys in the jazz category, who cares, right? Not a bad place to be.
Yeah, I think I have an immense amount of respect for jazz and as a music and jazz as a tradition. But, you know, I think a lot of the most exciting jazz music that I'm hearing nowadays is a sort of amalgamation of many different styles. So it's something I'm very interested in, is bringing a multitude of flavors into one place. And so jazz is just one of those flavors, I guess.
So give us a sense of how you came to start making the videos, and that really you were the sole person here singing all the parts, playing all the instruments, and having your picture all over the screen.
So I suppose as a child, I just made music incessantly. Sorry. I made music incessantly as a kid. And I think that once I was about 16 or 17, I was very intrigued at these videos I was seeing online, at people just visualizing their processes. And I was fascinated by the idea that you can make something to look at, which imitates the things that you're hearing. And so for me, I guess I was 16 or 17 when I began to film things that I was also playing. But I had been making music for about 10 years before that in a recording environment. I was introduced to this software called Cubase, which is like a music production software, at age 7. And then by 11, I think I was onto Logic Pro, which is what I still use to this day, a music software program called Logic. So I guess that was almost like my primary instrument, was layering these tracks up on top of one another, and just kind of seeing what kinds of sounds I could find by joining these things together. So it's almost like gathering a bunch of secret recipes, you know, for how to get these sounds to work alongside each other. And then the visualization of that process, I guess, came slightly later on. But, you know, I think it was very much a matter of my mother in particular growing up, just encouraging me to climb inside my own imagination and just spend some time there.
When it came to the songs that you were choosing, I mean, it's a lot of covers, right? So you'll do everything, as I mentioned, in My Room, but you'll even do the theme to the Flintstones.
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. They're a modern Stone Age family.
There's a lot of range there.
Yes, indeed. I mean, so I suppose, yeah, in the years before In My Room came out, I was very much focused on just reinventing songs that I really loved. So, you know, I mentioned Stevie Wonder for The Joy earlier on, but yes, Stevie was very important to me, and people like Michael Jackson, and then lots of old jazz standards. You know, I've always loved, you know, these old jazz songs like I've Told Every Little Star and things like this. So I liked the process of getting inside the sort of DNA of these songs and seeing how much I could push them and reinvent them. And then when I came to make the album In My Room, that is primarily originals. So, yeah, there's the cover of the famous Beach Boys song In My Room, and then also the Flintstones theme tune and one Stevie Wonder song called You and I. And so all eight songs otherwise are original songs. And I think what I was trying to do was take the foundation of learning that I'd sort of founded as a kid, because I'm very much a sort of self-taught musician. And I tried to forget everything that I knew as far as the kind of technicalities of music were concerned, and just write some songs that made me feel good, you know?
Right. One of the things that comes out very clearly in the album, especially, but in the videos as well, is what a great voice you have. And I assume that sort of what started it, that there was a realization there that you could do this? Or was it always the interest in the technology and the music itself?
Interesting. So I suppose what you've laid out there are three different worlds. One is the idea that my voice started the whole thing, which I think is true. And as a kid, I sang classical music. So between the ages of about 8 and 13, back when I had that sort of the pure voice of the boy, as
right.
It were, I sang in a bunch of operas and productions and things like that. And I really fell in love with the idea of being a part of a number of groups of singers. And I loved soaring over the top of them all, having that high, pure voice, you know. And so I guess I was brought up to have a sound classical technique as a singer. It was the only instrument I can really claim to having a fairly good technique, because the others are slightly like a shambles. but, you know, I think that once my voice broke, my imagination was trying to build these sounds, but I couldn't use the voice in the way that I used to be able to. So I began to draw upon, you know, the piano that was in the house. And then I remember I received a double bass for my 14th birthday, and I was always drumming on all sorts of things. So I think at that stage, I began to just experiment more. And over those years, I guess I was lucky enough to have a voice that was then able to get quite low. And once I'd figured that out, I think it was quite natural to me, just having always been so in love with musical harmony and, you know, singing in parts and things, just to try and sing all these parts at once. So try and sing the low part and then all the middle parts and then the high parts, and just sort of add all of these different notes that I was hearing in the chords. And I think that once I'd had a taste of that, I didn't want to go back, because it was too good to miss. So I think that's become one of maybe a couple of trademarks of mine, is singing in harmony with myself, you know.
So you play, you'll go and so there's the singing, obviously, but then there's the music, and you will go and you'll play the piano and you'll play the guitar and you will play all the various instruments. Is there a point where you think to yourself, well, this is getting to be kind of a pain in the ass, maybe I'll just hire a guitarist?
Right. Yeah. I mean, so I guess I've always had a very self, what's the right adjective for this? I guess self-contained process.
Yeah.
Whereby I really, really enjoy taking the time just to make everything the way that it is inside my head, which is often quite nuanced. So I think if I were to find a guitarist, you know, and I've played music with guitarists before, and it's fantastic. And playing music with other musicians obviously is a very, very important part of growing up as a musician, because there's just no way you can get the full picture if you're just only doing things on your own. But, you know, I found that I take things from all of my different musical experiences playing with other people, and then try to crystallize the way that I understood to be, you know, in my imagination. And, you know, by no stretch of my mind do I claim to be a guitarist, really.
Right.
Or even, you know, even like a drummer or a bass player necessarily. I think it was very much a process of trying to understand how these things fit together. And then so I'm playing the guitar from someone, from the point of view of somebody who understands how the guitar sounds in different situations and has a little bit of vocabulary on the guitar, enough so to do. But really, my primary investment, I think, is in the way this stuff sounds musically. And once I've got some language, I think I quite enjoy using that language in more unconventional ways. So, you know, for example, I think if I'm making a groove out of percussion sounds, I'm less likely to play it on the drum kit than I am to record it and layer it up out of just household objects like, you know, pots and pans and boxes and the walls and weird sounds like that, because I think that I enjoy things sounding a bit more like my life. But I think just to kind of draw upon the things around me was natural to me, but certainly playing with other musicians growing up informed me immensely just about how those instruments work in an instrumental setting. And I think when I came to tour this album in my room, which was obviously made entirely on my own in that little room in my house in London, it made sense to me, I think, just to try and push the live performance thing, to try and accommodate how on earth somebody could tour a room, which is quite a strange idea. But I'd seen a multitude of people trying to do the one-man show thing, and I didn't feel like any of them had really got the thing I was trying to do down. So I wanted to really challenge myself, and it just so happened that serendipitously I received this Facebook message out of the blue from a wonderful guy named Ben Bloomberg. And Ben's a PhD student at MIT in Boston, and together we've found a way to bring that room to the stage. So it's a great big circle of musical instruments and five different looping machines that I can trigger at different times, and then this vocal synthesizer called a harmonizer, which essentially samples my voice in real time and means I can sing all those vocal harmonies, but play all the harmonies live. And I think that the show has evolved now to a point where I'm so excited to be on the road and touring it. And obviously for the next few months, I'm going to be really concentrating on that process and whittling that down to be the best it can possibly be before moving on to the next project, which I'm sure will involve a multitude of musicians. But I think, you know, at this point in my life, I wanted to just crystallize that feeling of being in that room.
Is it ever scary for you? Because I think any of us who've ever used, you know, just working with our smartphones or our computers or our laptops, whatever the case may be, have those moments where technology will not allow us to do what we want to do because of some little bug, hiccup, or whatever. So given that it isn't just you and an instrument, it's you and technology, does that ever scare you when you just like miss one beat of one thing that should have happened that didn't?
Interesting question. I mean, so for one thing, you're correct. And technology is something that only really works when you befriend the fact that there will be bugs and things will go wrong and sometimes you stumble and all sorts of things like that. I think that for me, I've really concentrated on the technology here just enhancing real instruments and the way that they sound. So, you know, the circle of instruments is truly a piano and a guitar and keyboards and drums and things like that. So essentially what the technology does is it enables me to play them, you know, all at once. But I don't think I'm ever too concerned about playing the instruments. I'm a lot more concerned about making sure that the technology is going to work alongside them to organize them in the right order, and then that things trigger correctly and that the loopers will work and things like that. And, you know, there have been times where, you know, the show kind of turns on its head and everything goes wrong. And in those kinds of situations, you just need to make some kind of magic happen. And luckily, there are a bunch of instruments around and you can just jump on one of them and do something. And actually, sometimes those are the most magical moments ever. But in general, I think that, in the past 6 months of touring, fairly extensively, we've got the show to a point where it feels pretty reliable, and that's kind of amazing that we've done that, because it's a very fragile show, technically speaking. It's also very experimental, partly because some of this technology has just never even been attempted before. So,
right.
You know, it's kind of a crazy setup, but once it's all working and everything's swimming in a nice way, I think it's a real treat to be in the center of that circle.
But when it gets down to it, when we are sitting in the amphitheater at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center and we have our perhaps have our eyes closed and we're enjoying the breeze of a summer evening and we're listening to what you're doing. It's primarily about the music for you, or do you mind if the audience is interested in the technology and how you're doing that and how you're pulling off this amazing feat, or do you want people to focus just on the music, or is it a mix of both?
I mean, for me, it's always going to be about the music. It's never going to be about trying to prove anything with the technology. I've learned some stuff about technology, I guess, over the last couple of years, and I'm a firm believer in this principle that, you know, if technology makes us more human, then it's doing its job, and then if it makes us less human or kind of gets in the way of whatever we're trying to do as human beings, I think it doesn't have its place. And I can think of a multitude of examples where technology can inhibit our humanities a bit, which is sad. But, you know, I reckon with this show, the only thing that I'd love the technology to do, and I feel like its place is in doing, is enabling the music to happen, you know. And if it were about the technology, you know, if the show were about how all of this stuff is possible and how much of a feat it is and how it's crazy that all this stuff's going on at once, I think that to me is quite distracting. And I truly hope that what shines through the show is the music behind it, because I feel like the songs have really evolved to work with the show in a particular kind of a way, and so hopefully that will shine through. I mean, I'm sure that piece, you know, there are always certain people in the audience who do wonder, you know, how it's possible, and it's a very interesting setup, and I think, you know, lots of people who have tried similar things in the past are interested to know. But yeah, I feel like right now with the show, the bottom line is that the songs that I'm playing as I did in my room on my own, I have the chance to play now on the stage on my own, and that feels really special.
Very special. Well, Grammy-winning jazz prodigy Jacob Collier is set to bring his one-man band live show to the Fryhofer Saratoga Jazz Festival this Saturday. Saturday night, he'll be going on right before Chaka Khan. The festival runs both Saturday and Sunday. You can find out more information by going to spac.org, spac.org. Jacob, a great pleasure to speak with you. I wish you all the luck in the world and safe travels to Saratoga.
Thank you very much indeed, sir. See you soon.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, Jacob Collier will be there Saturday night at the Fryhofer Saratoga Jazz Festival. You can find more at spac.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.